Hi, everybody. I'm John Kiriakou, and this is Deep Focus. This is another Q&A session. As I said before, I really appreciate it when you put questions in the chat. We read all of the questions. We try to answer all the questions. So please keep doing that. I'm very happy to answer them. And also, if you haven't already done it, please subscribe, share, comment, tell your friends, tell your family. It's only because of you that we've gotten as many subscribers as we have, and that really helps us with the YouTube algorithm to get the word out. So without further ado, let me get to the questions. CBaller77 says, John, I recently watched an interview that you gave where you stated that it is now your belief that Mossad knew 9/11 was coming. Can you elaborate on why you believe this is the case? Absolutely. I do believe that Mossad knew that 9/11 was preparing to happen. And I based that on a couple of different things. First of all, it's been my long held and oft stated view that the Mossad is probably the single best intelligence service in the world. They have their fingers in everything. We've seen just over the past year how they have almost decapitated the Iranian government. They've certainly decapitated Hezbollah and the Iranian military leadership. We know that they have sources in all of the Arab countries. They have sources inside Arab intelligence services. They always know where the next threat is coming from. And I'm convinced that they knew about 9/11, but it was in Israel's interest for the US to be attacked on 9/11 because they knew that we would respond with a very heavy hand and that we would kill a lot of people. And in the end, you know, over the course of 20 years, we killed about 2 million people in the Middle East and South Asia when you count both the Iraq War and Afghanistan. So I believe that they knew about it. There's another thing that bothers me. We've all heard the story about the dancing Israelis. There really were dancing Israelis. They were actually arrested by the NYPD and they were held in temporary custody for about 90 days after 9/11. Why was there such a large team of Israeli intelligence officials in New York on 9/11? Why would they be there? And why would they be dancing in celebration at the collapse of the World Trade Center? Because they knew it was coming. And they knew what our reaction would be. So that's why I believe that the Israelis knew about 9/11. Jess Unravels. Thanks for the $2, Jess. Jess says, how do you find writing gigs that pay like that? And is that something you can do if you're not a person who is known at all? I love to write and could use the extra money, but not sure if it would be worth it since no one really knows who I am and probably doesn't necessarily care what I think. LOL. Don't sell yourself short. I'll tell you how I started. Granted, I had already blown the whistle on the CIA's torture program, but by 2007, people had forgotten who I was. This was well before my arrest, so nobody remembered who in the world John Kiriakou was. In any event, I was working at a Big Four accounting firm at the time as the deputy head of their competitive intelligence practice. And I got a call from a CIA friend of mine, a former boss of mine, who said that I should expect a call from Paramount Pictures, that they had asked him to do something. He was not equipped to do it, but he said, I have a friend who would do it, and he referred them to me. So Paramount Pictures called. It was the vice president for legal affairs. And they said that they were going to come out with a movie called The Kite Runner based on a book of the same name. And they had inadvertently put the child actors at risk. And they needed somebody to quietly go to Afghanistan, bribe everybody that needed to be bribed, and get these children and their family members out of Afghanistan. So I took 2 weeks off vacation. I flew to Afghanistan. I bribed everybody I could bribe, and I got 27 people onto a plane, and we all flew to Dubai, and we saved the families. Okay. When I got back, I said to a buddy of mine He said, well, how was Afghanistan? I said, it was kind of cool. It was a little bit dangerous. It was fun. I'm an adrenaline junkie, so I love that stuff anyway. And he said, but what was it like being in Afghanistan, like in wartime? And I said, oh, dude, listen, I said, we're losing the war. We're losing. And I kind of listed these 4, 5, 6 points of things that I had noticed while I was there. And he said, you should write an op-ed. I said, I've never written an op-ed before. I don't even know how I'd go about doing it. And he said, write it like you're telling the story and I can get it placed. So I wrote this op-ed. And the next thing I know, it's in the Sunday Los Angeles Times. And then I get a check for $400. And the LA Times editorial page editor said, hey, listen, we really like your writing style. If you want to write other articles for us, just send them in. I said, great. So I don't know. I've written half a dozen op-eds for the LA Times. But then I thought, you know what? If I can write for the LA Times, I can write for anybody. So I've written for the New York Times. I've written for the Washington Post. I've written for the Wall Street Journal, the Guardian. And then I thought, rather than do this once every 6 months, I'd like to do it like regularly. And maybe you can't make a living off of it, but you know, $300, $400, $500, that's $300, $400, $500 I didn't have yesterday. And so I started writing for, at first it was reader-supported news, and then it was Consortium News, and then it was Consortium News and Covert Action Magazine. And then occasionally I'll write for a Greek newspaper. But the bottom line is this, you just have to start writing and don't stop. An op-ed should be between 700 and 1200 words, and it should be tight and concise. And start off by just sending it everywhere. Send it to the Post and the Times and the LA Times and the LA Review of Books and the London Review of Books and the Guardian and this website and that website and the other website. And once you get published, then you can say, hi, my name is Jess Unravels. My work has appeared in such publications as, and then you list them and you say, I would like to submit this op-ed for your consideration. And then you're going to be shocked when they actually take the op-ed and then they send you a check for $400. I'm going to recommend that you start with Reader Supported News. They have a part of their website called Writing for Godot. They don't pay for it, but it's a portal by which anybody can get published. If they like what you're writing, in that they like your style, not necessarily the content, because, you know, free speech and all. If they like what you're writing, they'll publish it. And then you can take the fact that you've been published at Reader Supported News and go to other outlets and say, I've written for Reader Supported News. And then you submit it to Covert Action Magazine and you say, I'm in Covert Action Magazine. So that's how you get started. You just have to write all the time. And eventually that dam is going to break and then you're going to find that you're a professional writer. So good luck, Jess. You can do it. Watson30000 says, I believe you said that CIA would use or allow the Saudis spying on us to get around laws that stopped CIA operating in the United States. Yes, I did say that. Could it be the case that Trump is using Israeli intelligence as his eyes and ears directly instead of domestic intelligence because he no longer trusts domestic? Absolutely, yes. Or better yet, he depends on Israeli intelligence for information on opposing deep state domestic intelligence factions. Also, yes. Maybe this is part of a negotiated deal with him. Listen, everything you say there is absolutely plausible. I don't have any proof, of course, that it's happening. But the answer to every one of those questions is yes. I would add, though, that I think it's more likely, probably, that rather than using Israeli intelligence, which would then have it hanging over his head and there would be a quid pro quo and they would want something from him, I wouldn't be surprised if he was using British intelligence. Because with the British, there would be no quid pro quo. We asked them to do it. They would do it. And maybe a year or two from now, they ask us to do it for them against a British citizen. But the bottom line is everything that you're proposing here is certainly plausible. Yes. The Stick 2035 says, John, in your humble opinion, what is worse, a political system paralyzed by international blackmail or a mole? These are not mutually exclusive, correct? Correct. They are not mutually exclusive, and they are both extraordinarily damaging. But let's look at the damage separately. So a political system paralyzed by international blackmail, the entire country would be hurt by that. The entire system would be harmed, would be corrupted when there is a political system paralyzed by blackmail, regardless of where the blackmail is coming from. Although I can guess what you're thinking. A mole, while the mole theoretically puts the entire country at risk, imagine a mole with access to nuclear secrets. Most moles aren't that highly placed. So they're not necessarily putting the whole country at risk so much as they're putting specific operations at risk or foreign intelligence assets at risk. Let's look at the two most damaging moles in recent American history, Aldrich Ames and Robert Hansen. Aldrich Ames was a GS-15 CIA officer in the CIA's Soviet Operations Division, later Russia Operations Division. And Robert Hansen was the head of counterintelligence at the FBI. He's the one that was supposed to be looking for moles in the American government. It turned out he was the mole. Well, the reason that we realized there was a mole in the first place was because all of our assets, all of the recruited agents that we had amassed in Russia were suddenly being executed. Well, the only explanation is that there's a mole. And we caught Ames. But then they continued to get executed, which made us realize that there was a second mole. And it turned out to be Robert Hansen. So did they put the whole country at risk? Theoretically, maybe. Practically, no, not really. They resulted in the deaths of probably 24 people, which is awful. And Hansen died in a steel bunk in the Supermax prison in Florence, Colorado, which is what he deserved. Aldrich Ames is going to die the same death in the same place, which is what he deserves. But a political system paralyzed by international blackmail hurts all of us. And I think that that's probably worse. Mindspace 696 says, was Epstein working for Israel? Was he working for U.S. intelligence? Please, it's way past time people stopped thinking solely in terms of states. Epstein was an agent of transnational Jewish power, just as Ghislaine Maxwell's father, Robert Maxwell, was an agent of transnational Jewish power. That's where analysis needs to go. I disagree with that. First of all, I believe 1,000% yes that Epstein was working for Israeli intelligence. I don't think he was working for U.S. intelligence, just because what Epstein was able to get away with for so long is not the way U.S. intelligence operates. I don't believe in transnational Jewish power. I think that's a trope. Robert Maxwell was a paid agent of the Israeli Mossad. He was not an agent of transnational Jewish power. I think we get ourselves in trouble when we think up a power center that is bigger than it actually is. I disagree. CT5336A says, hi, John. I recently came across your talks and I'm stuck like glue listening to you. Thank you for that. Thanks a lot for so much interesting content. Something that's been on my mind is the Mandela Bay shootings. Is there anything that you may have heard about? I don't buy the public narrative, and someone said it may have been a Saudi op. I think you mean Mandalay Bay in Vegas. You know, I've said many times, I am the least conspiratorial person that I know. I've always been of the belief that the simplest explanation is usually the correct explanation. But I have to agree with you that this one just simply doesn't make sense. And why is it that the information has either never been fully released or was destroyed? This is the worst mass shooting in American history and probably the worst mass shooting in world history. And we're supposed to think that it was done by one guy in a hotel room who, by all accounts, had no mental problems, no mental illness, was not suicidal, was not homicidal, was a gambler and had lost, but that's no reason to shoot up a country western concert. I haven't heard that it could have been a Saudi op. That would surprise me because the Saudis aren't that sophisticated. But I have to agree with you that there's got to be more than meets the eye. I think that the FBI either has lied to us or has deliberately kept the information from the American people. You know, we should look more into that. Maybe we can find somebody formerly of the FBI who can talk about something like this. That's a good idea. Thanks for that. Jeff Easy 6572 says, if he enters or is about to enter a questionable area regarding information, do you still contact the CIA to ask what can be spoken about or revealed? Oh, you mean me. Okay, so if I enter or am about to enter a questionable area regarding information, do you still contact the CIA to ask what can be spoken? I got it. That's a good question. Finally, is there a top event that was newsworthy or most people know about that you think to yourself, boy, if they only knew the truth? Okay, give me a second. So your first question, the answer is yes. Being a former CIA officer, I am compelled until the day I die to send everything I write that even touches on intelligence or foreign policy to the CIA's Publications Review Board for clearance. I've done that with every one of my books. I don't do it with every one of my articles because a lot of them are based on current information, or a lot of them have to do with prison conditions, sentencing reform, stuff like that that's not intelligence related. But everything else, yes. If I know that I'm going to say something new, or I know that I'm going to be asked questions that are new, yes, I have to submit those to the CIA's Publications Review Board for clearance. And I'll tell you what, just between us, they used to be real dicks to me. Until I got out of prison and public opinion about me began to change. And now they, boom, just like that, in an hour or two, they clear everything I write. My detractors have largely retired or died. And so there's a new generation at the CIA and they think differently of me. Your second question, though, is there a top event that was newsworthy or most people know about that I think to myself, boy, if they knew the truth? Yes. Americans don't have any understanding of Greek terrorism. Greek terrorism is not an issue anymore. The terrorist groups in Greece have been destroyed. In large part, they destroyed themselves. In a lesser part, the CIA helped to destroy them. But the Greeks really get the lion's share of the credit for just stamping out terrorism in Greece. But terrorism in Greece was far, far more complicated than meets the eye. And forgive me if I'm being careful here, but the U.S. is the U.S.'s involvement in events in Greece that led to terrorism, I think, have never been fully explored. We're not little Joe innocent guy in modern Greek history. We're not. You know, I remember when Greece elected its first socialist prime minister in 1981, I think it was, Andreas Papandreou. He said he wanted to withdraw from NATO, withdraw from the European Union, and throw the American military bases out of Greece. And I remember thinking, oh, that's awful, that communist, he hates America. No, I understand it now. It never happened. but I sure understand the anger because of what I know, what I learned from behind the scenes, being in the CIA and then being assigned as a CIA officer in Greece. I understand it now. That's the last question that we have, but please, please keep them coming. I love doing these and they appear to be relatively popular. So please put your questions in the chat or in the chat next to some of the interviews that we're doing. Thank you for subscribing, for liking, for sharing, and for telling your friends and family members about the show. We really appreciate it. Listen, we are coming up to 100,000 subscribers. Never in my wildest dreams did I ever think this would be possible, but we're close. I'm hoping we get there by like March. But again, it's only thanks to people like you that we can even get this done. So thank you. I'm John Kiriakou. You've been listening to a Q&A session from Deep Focus. We'll see you next time.